Hello and welcome to the Creativity Cafe, where we get to explore creativity in all its aspects, from designing your lifestyle, your work and business, to creating more beautiful and sustainable solutions to global challenges. I'm Katie Curtin, and I'm hosting this cafe because creativity and helping creative change makers thrive and get their work out in the world is what I'm all about. And you can visit me at www.katiecurtin.com. Today's guest is Melissa D'Antoni, who is the visionary force behind Fire Tree Studios, and she'll be talking about intuitive painting, ignite your inner fire and creativity. And I'll be talking in a moment about Melissa. However, first I'd just like to welcome you, Melissa.
Thank you so much, Katie. I'm so excited to be here with you.
Me too. And so Melissa D'Antoni is the visionary force, as I said, behind Fire Tree Studios. And she left a highly successful, by certain standards, as she said, because we all have our definitions of success. But it was an unfulfilling career in internet and technology marketing. And then she set out to pursue her real passion, creative self-expression, and to live a truly empowered and inspired life. And she'll be telling us more about that. And she's a vision keeper and creative catalyst for the last 15 years, and she inspires others on their journey of self-realization in order to transform their art, life, and business with passion and practicality. And Fire Tree Studios offers intuitive painting retreats, Ignite Your Life, and coaching programs, the Phoenix Rising Experience, the Art of Entrepreneurship, and the Fire Tree Method of Creative Catalyst Training Program to serve clients in unlocking their full potential on the canvas and off. And currently, she's actually on a tour with her workshops, and we'll hear more about that, but it sounds like it's going really, really well. So I'm first going to spend about 40 minutes talking about today's topic with Melissa, and then I'm going to open up the call for any questions that our audience might have and any discussion on what she is saying. And if you have your computer in front of you, I'd invite you to visit our Facebook page and type Creativity Cafe in the search field and click on the like button and introduce yourself and post questions and comments there as they come up. If you're on the webcast, you can also post your comments and questions there, whatever is convenient to you. So make yourself comfortable, take a sip of your favorite brew while I welcome Melissa.
Oh, thank you so much, Katie. Again, I'm just thrilled to have this time with you, and you know, in the conversations that we've had so far together, it's always been incredibly inspiring and enlightening. So I'm again just thrilled to be here.
Thank you. I feel the same, and I'm so looking forward to delve deeply into what you do and find out even more than I have found out so far in my conversations, and to allow our listeners to know more about your work. So could you start by telling me your story and what led you to quit your high-paying corporate job and become an artist and creative catalyst?
Absolutely. Well, you know, it's kind of an interesting story. I want to start off by talking about my background in creativity because it leads to this sort of radical shift in my career. When I was younger, my parents used to call me a highly imaginative child. And I, you know, grew up with very type A career-minded parents, very left brain, and so I think on some level they didn't really know what to do with my imagination as a child and my creativity, and I think it also mirrored, you know, our culture, or mirrors our culture, that we live in a very sort of left brain dominant Western world. And so I sort of learned at a young age that my creativity and my imagination was something that that wasn't necessarily valued, and so I began to repress it. It wasn't until my senior year in high school that I had a painting teacher. Mm-hmm. I was just with a friend of mine, actually, in when I was on the road in Boulder that I went to high school with, who reminded me of that teacher's name, and I need to contact her because she made such an impact on me and really inspired me as a painter. And so I graduated from high school and I went off to college. I went to Tulane University, and I decided as a freshman I wanted to be a painting major. And I remember my father saying, "No, you're not. You know, you need to do something more practical. You know, you need to find something that you can fall back on, that you can make money with. You know, you can always do painting on the side as a hobby." And I remember him saying the same about it. Then I was like, well, maybe social work, and because they had a wonderful social work school. And he said the same thing. You can always do philanthropy on the side. Like, go back to school and something that you can make money in, and which I think is really interesting. And, and for the sake of my father, I think that he really wanted to instill in his daughter, you know, a way to be able to support herself. So I really respect mm-hmm. that in my overall journey. But I, again, had that message of, you know, creativity and even social work and healing is something that, wasn't necessarily valued in our society, in our modern day society, yeah. in our culture. So I was an English major, and I think his rationale at the time was like, well, everyone in business needs to know how to write, you know, write well. And I ended up studying romantic literature and creative writing and was a painting minor. And I got out of school, and I had no idea what I wanted to do. And my family was actually living in Boston at the time, so I moved up to Boston and somehow got a job. And I figured, well, I love to work with people and I love to write, so I ended up working for a communications firm in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and it turned out that it was their clients. They were sort of focused on the technology sector, and it was the beginning of the dot-com boom. Mm. And so I learned sort of the technology arena working for this communications company and working for different startups. As clients, and I really enjoyed being that kind of creative agency life and the startup environment. It was so entrepreneurial, and it was really innovative and super creative and really inspiring. So I learned a ton about marketing and innovation, and I ended up moving out to San Francisco and living through the dot-com boom, and again, just really thriving in that startup, entrepreneurial, you know, innovative environment. And then I got burnt out, and I ended up taking my technology experience and going to work for Intel Corporation. And my rationale at the time was like, I need to go work for a big technology brand at this point. So I got there, and I had this great job. I was doing global internet marketing for Intel, and I was traveling and making great money, but I became depressed, and I was bored and really unfulfilled because I missed that creative entrepreneurial environment. And so I began to think, like, how the hell did I get here? You know, I knew my life purpose was not to sell microprocessors. And so I went back to my creative roots. You know, I was like, okay, if I have done everything that I was told by society and sort of everyone else, that by other people's standards of what was supposed to make me happy, and I wasn't happy. So I really began searching and seeking in terms of what was really going to feed my soul and give me a level of fulfillment that I hadn't had yet to experience. So I began to take a ton of different creative classes. I took a life drawing class in San Francisco. I took a writing class and a poetry class at the Writing Salon in Bernal Heights in San Francisco. I took photography But my real passion was painting, and I literally stumbled onto this studio in my neighborhood in San Francisco in the Noe Valley, Glen Park area, and it was called the Center for Creative Exploration, and it was just called the Painting Studio, the Center for Creative Exploration. And I'm actually going to be teaching a class there next month, which I'm so excited about. But that's where I first found this intuitive painting process, and I remember calling the director, Barbara Kaufman, to sign up for a class, and I remember she almost tried to talk me out of it. You know, she was like, well, this isn't your typical painting class, and I'm not going to teach you how to paint, and we don't teach technique or skill, and, you know, this is all about spontaneous creativity. It's about self-expression. It's about exploring the imagination. And I was like, you know, coming from Intel in the Silicon Valley and, you know, this kind of sterile corporate engineering environment, I was like, sign me up. This is exactly what I need. So in that first class, you know, there was no direction in terms of what to paint. There was no still life. There was no assignment. It was basically a free-for-all with the paint, with a ton of paint, and we used, you know, paper and tempera, which I'll talk a little bit more. And the reason for that is that there's less attachment to the end result. So it's very process-oriented art, meaning that it's about play and discovery and exploration and experimentation. So my first experience in that studio, you know, I had a very subtle but very powerful epiphany. And that was, you know, it brought me just the experience of playing with color and paper and simple tools, you know, simple paints. And actually my paintings at that time were really simple. It brought me so much joy. And it brought me so much a sense of freedom and a huge, almost, you know, energetic release that I was like, wow, I felt connected to my life force, to my creativity, to my creative source. And I felt, you know, this expansion. And I felt alive in a way that I had never felt before, or I hadn't felt like that in a really long time. So it was so powerful for me, and it was so simple, and I was like, okay, and I just knew at that point that that was my life purpose. It was to create experiences for people to connect to their inner creative source and their life force through creative self-expression, through creativity, through play, and through paint. And so that they, too, could experience that sense of joy and creativity and creative abundance, which I know we're going to talk about in a little bit, too, like the space of what Michelle Cousseau calls point zero, this place of all possibility in the moment, really to our creative power. And so that just set me on a whole new journey of you know, I began to paint as a spiritual practice at the painting studio in San Francisco, and I painted for, you know, 2 and 3 sessions a week, and I would do 7-day retreats, and I just, it took me on a really wonderful, deeply rich personal journey and spiritual journey. I ended up, you know, okay, so how am I going to do this? And my own sort of type A left brain was like, okay. So I went and looked at art therapy programs and wanting to go back to school and sort of take the next step on my career path. And I really found as an artist and through continuing this painting experience that the clinical art therapy program was too clinical for me. I wasn't really interested in diagnosing other people through their art as an artist. That the act of just creative expression in itself was healing and therapeutic, and and a really powerful tool for self-awareness and personal growth. So I think that really came from understanding in my own journey that creativity is like a muscle, and when we stop using that muscle, it's almost as if something inside of us starts to die. At least that's what I had experienced with myself. And so I began to link creativity as an essential component to well-being and wholeness.
Yes.
And then I discovered the field of expressive arts therapy, which was all about that. It really was about full self-expression as essential to well-being and wholeness, and as a tool for self-discovery. So I then got a master's in transpersonal psychology at the Institute of Transpersonal Psychology with a focus in creative expression, and did all of my training to become my clinical training to become a marriage and family therapist and an expressive arts therapist. And then I decided that I didn't want to be a therapist. I really found that for me personally, that the painting experience and process was and all of the expressive arts that I had also studied was so powerful in itself, and that and I at the time in this transition from this technology career and marketing, I had worked with a life coach and spiritual teacher, Dorothy Dvack, whose background was with the Foundation of Inner Peace and A Course in Miracles, and she founded the Center of Excellence in San Francisco and New York. And I had done a lot of work with her in my own transition, and she, in terms of making the transition from, Intel to this very different creative world, and I found that the tools and the framework that I was working with her was so powerful for me in terms of actualizing my vision and staying in, on my discovering my soul's purpose and really grounding all that creative energy was so powerful that I decided after leaving my clinical training, that I would take the expressive arts and marry them with a strong coaching framework, which was really mirroring my own path and what had worked for me. And that essentially became the Fire Tree Method. It's a strong sort of right brain, left brain path and integration to wholeness.
When did you actually leave your corporate job and set up Fire Tree Studios, and how did you get to do that?
So I did all my clinical training, and I had actually left Intel before I went back to graduate school. I saved some money, and I had the opportunity to go and travel in Southeast Asia for 3 months before going to going to graduate school, and so I quit my job, my full-time job. I just took the leap. I was really clear that I was ready to go and had to do some prerequisites in order to go back to graduate school because I didn't have a background in psychology. So I just took a leap of faith, and I think also having a coach and mentor that really supported me and trusting myself and being really clear about my purpose was allowed me to have that as an inner compass so that I was able to take those leaps. And also to have a plan. I was going to graduate school, I took out student loans, and I did save some money. I actually ended up, I had a 401k and some stock at Intel, and I ended up cashing that out, and that was just a decision that I made that, and I think that was also supported through my mentor as well. Of course, it was my choice, but I was really clear that I wanted to invest in myself and in my vision and in my dream and in this I was so inspired and had so much passion towards it that that much to many people's disapproval, I made the choice, and it served me, you know, really well so far. But, you know, that was a personal risk that I chose to take, and I think my travels to Asia really, you know, was a trip of a lifetime, and so I will never forget that, and I think it's definitely supported me in my own growth and evolution as well. And then, so I continued, and I trained with Dorothy as a coach after graduate school and became certified as a coach and consultant from the Center of Excellence, and then went on to I was actually engaged, and my ex-fiancé and I were living in Pennsylvania, and it became clear to me that we weren't in alignment and had very different visions of what we wanted our life to be like. And so I made a decision to move. I really felt called to Austin, and I wanted to go somewhere. Mm-hmm. You know, I grew up in the South, in Houston and New Orleans, and wanted to go back down south and take this work to somewhere, you know, back to my roots kind of thing. And I felt guided to go to Austin, so I came to Austin. And I was unsure, you know, it was in a big transition, and so really kind of starting over from scratch, but I had all this training and inspiration and this powerful vision of opening a studio, and I had already had scheduled a conference to attend the International Expressive Arts Therapy conference in Boone, North Carolina, and I went to that event, and Sean McNiff, who's one of the grandfathers of expressive arts therapy, and he's at Lesley College and wrote a beautiful book called Trust the Process, and he's like this little Irish shaman, and I went to his pre-conference session where he did some shamanic drumming, and we all were to bring creative supplies and just, you know, and spend the day in the creative process. And I took actually pastels at the time because they were easy to travel with. And I, in that session, you know, I was still in inquiry with spirit around, do I start the studio or do I get a job and do something? You know, I was getting a lot of feedback to just do something stable and practical at the time. And I did a sketch, and the images that came forward were leaves and fire. And those were two very archetypal images for me that had reoccurred in my paintings for years. And on the back, I just wrote Fire Tree, and then like Fire Tree Studios. And it had so much, you know, meaning and symbolism with the fire and passion and inspiration and transformation, and then the tree and the leaves about growth and grounding and rooting and the feminine and earthy, Mother Earth. And so it just seemed, again, like a perfect mirror to the fire tree method and sort of that right-left brain masculine feminine approach to wholeness, that I just sort of went with it. And so with very little money and a lot of passion and inspiration, I found a house in Austin and was really supported. I think, you know, going back to that quote about commitment, it's like when we commit to our vision, then Providence moves too. And I just was incredibly supported by the community here in Austin, by my community, and started my studio. I turned my dining room into a painting studio, and I started teaching classes, and then it just sort of, and that was 7 years ago, and so it organically grew out of that.
Wow. So you were really, and if people go later to Melissa's
website, they'll see that the fire tree image is very it's in her logo and everything. And so it's beautiful. I mean, it's beautiful actually to hear of those origins. And it's not often actually that you have a logo that's so linked in with somebody's artistic practice and creative journey. So that's lovely to know that story. Now, doing intuitive painting has been, you know, as you said, a very important part of your creative journey, as well as exploring some of the other arts. Now, what makes intuitive painting such a powerful tool for you and those you teach?
It's such a great question. Intuitive painting, the benefits of intuitive painting, I think, as I sort of shared before in my own personal experience of that first time that I painted at the studio, this process studio in San Francisco, it connects me and it connects us to our internal world, and in a way that we are invited to listen. So, for example, when we paint in an intuitive painting, it is like a meditation. It's quiet. We don't make any comments on the paintings. And the reason and the purpose for that is so that you can really listen to your intuition and listen to your inner guidance, your inner voice. And so how that works in terms of painting is I will invite someone to listen to, okay, what color are you drawn to? And, you know, where are you guided? Like, what do you feel like? And really bringing awareness to our senses and our emotional feeling body. It's like, where does the paint want to move? And what color? And what does it look like? And what is your being? How are you being guided? Mm. And from where? Is it from the voice of the inner critic, which always comes up when we are in any creative process? Or is it the voice of your own deep intuitive knowing, really the voice of your soul, so, or higher self? So I think the benefits are really about strengthening your connection to yourself, integrating. You know, whenever we engage in any expressive art, whether it's writing or painting or dance, we are connecting the three bodies. So the mental, emotional, the physical, and the spiritual and energetic. So we really come into our wholeness when we are fully expressing ourselves. And that, just that state of alignment, is really, really powerful and a central creative tool. So I think overall, you know, connecting to that deeper knowing, to trusting ourselves, to finding our voice, to taking risks and getting more comfortable taking creative risks, trusting our instincts and our deeper knowing, and then exploring the imagination, really having that kinesthetic, experiential, embodied experience of exploring the possibility in every moment. And it, you know, just with paper and paint, it can be really profound for people. And I know it has been for me.
And you mentioned earlier actually that you use tempera painting. You were going to say why that you use these type of materials. Like you don't, in intuitive painting, it's not so much getting expensive materials or, you know, paints or actually, canvases. It's something else, mm-hmm. isn't it?
Yes, and the reason,
you can elaborate more.
Yeah, most of my clients are either trained artists that have lost their passion for art or their own creative voice or are really trying to find their style and their authenticity for painting. My other clients are, you know, clients that haven't painted in since they were in kindergarten or don't feel that they're creative. Mm-hmm. So the importance of having inexpensive materials like paper, although we use high-quality tempera, we use high-quality paper, but mm-hmm. the reason for that is so, you know, the ego and the inner critic loves to make excuses and sort of sabotage our experience of the present moment and our creative potential in the present moment. So if we use inexpensive materials like paper and tempera relative, you know, to oils and acrylics, then the ego can't say, or the inner critic can't say, oh, you know, I don't want to waste all of this paint or this canvas. And so we are freed up to experiment more, to play, to take more creative risks, to focus more on the creative process rather than the end result or producing an outcome or something to hang on the wall. So it actually supports us in the studio and having just a more enjoyable experience because there's no attachment to the end result.
Mm. And I'm wondering, like, do you, I've done some intuitive painting many, many years ago, and he did it with tempera too and paper. Actually, it was very cheap paper, the stuff he used. And we had to do things like do things really quickly, like sometimes 15 seconds or 60 seconds to warm up things. I'm wondering what techniques or what different exercises you might do to help people in this intuitive painting, or do you just let people explore and not have any structure for it?
That's a great question. You know, I personally don't do anything in the beginning. We do a group sort of check-in and meditation and grounding practice called conscious breathing, just to get centered. And but I think, you know, because in my group experiences, everyone's coming to it from a different place in their own journey, that I work with people individually. And I like to allow that sort of freedom of really giving people space to create from within without any external suggestions, or because we are so conditioned in our society and in our culture and being told what to do and how to do something, and I think that really comes from the academic model, that we've lost that connection and that trust in ourselves and that deep knowing that we do know if we're just given the space and the safety and the permission to trust ourselves. So I'm a big fan of just with not having a lot of structure. I mean, there we have three guidelines that do provide the structure, which are we refrain from talking about the paintings. We refrain from talking in the studio so that people can really listen and hear deep within their own intuition and guidance. And then I invite everyone to sign their name when they complete a painting to complete their process or to check in with me to make sure that their process is complete. Now, if somebody's stuck, as you mentioned, then I work with people individually. And so a technique that I regularly use when somebody feels stuck or is having a lot of mind chatter from the inner critic,
mm-hmm.
I use sand timers, and you can get them at Hobby Lobby. They're really fun and fantastic and all these different colors, and I will get a sand timer, and it's about 10 minutes, and I will say, okay, turn around, look at the paints, fill your palette with a ton of paint, and maybe even pick, you know, paints that you don't normally use or that you'd be like, oh, my God, I would never paint with that color, you know. And we have paints like glitter paints and fluorescents and, I mean, every color you can think of.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll invite them to fill their palette, and then I'll say, and then get brushes, and then I will turn over the timer for 10 minutes, and I'll say, go. And invite them to keep moving, like not stop and think. and just keep the brush moving from the palette to the paper without thinking about it. So they really free up, because that's, you know, usually what happens in the studio is that in any creative process is that our mind starts going and says, oh, this sucks. You don't know what you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that critical voice can really sabotage our own instincts and inner knowing and our creativity and our experience of the present moment. So so that process really frees people up. Or if I find an artist who's been trained and has an MFA and, you know, mm-hmm. they've been trained in a certain technique or whatever, and it's stifling their innate creativity and self-expression and their own authentic voice from coming, then I will say that, and I'll do that same process, and I'll say, okay, make an ugly painting, you know, give
mm-hmm.
yourself permission to make a mess, you know, and just like put paint on paper and just keep moving the brush. Because painting is a very kinesthetic process. It's actually a powerful energetic release. And when we open up those channels and allow it to flow, it can be, you know, a really powerful transformational tool.
Mm. And you mentioned in an earlier conversation that we had that the practice of intuitive painting can help you as an entrepreneur. Could you tell us about that more?
Absolutely. Well, I think in my own personal journey, you know, having intuitive painting as a spiritual practice really built up my own inner muscles around creativity and self-expression and finding my voice and trusting myself. You know, it gave me a safe and healthy way to express myself and also strengthen that ability to trust myself to take creative risks and follow my instincts. And I think that practice, that embodied practice, gave me the opportunity to do that in my business and follow my dream and follow my vision and follow, you know, and actualize that in the physical. So, you know, I think that it also allowed me to stay connected to my passion. And I think that to be successful as an entrepreneur, it's essential that we connect to that flow of passion and being able to trust ourselves and also self-acceptance. You know, it also taught me a lot of self-acceptance. I think that's another incredible benefit of the intuitive painting process, because when we are present, truly present with all of ourselves, our intuition and our inner critic, for example, you know, sometimes there's a battle that goes on there, and I think growing in compassion and self-love and self-acceptance and really discovering, embracing all aspects of ourselves supports any entrepreneurial journey. I mean, I think I see entrepreneurship and business is just another creative modality. It's just potentially got more risks involved because, you know, the medium, I guess, in general has more risks. But I think it's incredibly rewarding, and I think it's taught me a lot about business and following my vision and listening to my instincts in order to create a business.
Mm. Wonderful. So on your website, you talk about how the starving artist myth has to be thrown out the door. I'd love to hear more.
Well, the starving artist myth is something that I think we have, you know, it's this kind of archetypal myth that we have in our culture and in the collective unconscious. And I think it goes back to and is shown in my story, and I think this is true for most creatives, where, you know, as a culture, we have not valued creativity as important, or the right brain, for example, the right brain intelligence and knowing, as other left brain, more rational, practical thinking. And so I think that we are in a time, and Katie, I know you and I have talked a lot about this, but we are in a really crucial time in our own evolution as a planet where that has to change. As we step more into our wholeness, you know, embracing our creativity and everyone. I mean, I'm a believer that everyone is innately creative. And to embrace that and to cultivate that in our lives and our expression is essential for our awakening as a planet, for, you know, our fulfillment and joy. And so I think it's important that as creatives, as we step into this new era of the creative economy, I mean, I don't know if you've read, I'm sure you have, Daniel Pink's book, A Whole New Mind, where right-brainers will rule the world, and it talks all about the cultural creative class and how essential it is for our healing as a planet, for us as creatives to step into our power.
Yeah,
and
certainly it's so important because, I mean, really change is, there's so much change going on, so much innovation, which in fact, you know, our whole schooling, everything is not set up for it. We've been in this industrial model, and in fact, creativity is needed more than ever, not just by a few, but by everybody. to
absolutely
negotiate or navigate these times.
Yeah, and it's our birthright. I mean, I really feel
yes.
like, you know, we are, you know, made in the image of our Creator, and we are creative beings, and it is essential to our wholeness and wellness that we embrace that and we continue to innovate. And why, you know, I created a program called The Abundant Creative. It's an e-course. You can find it at theabundantcreative.com. And it really was my own personal journey of reclaiming my power around my relationship with money as an artist, as a creative, and looking at my own money story and money myth, and essentially reprogramming those beliefs through different books and resources and coaching tools and frameworks that you know, really supported me in having a paradigm shift around my relationship with money. And I think it's challenging because we're still, you know, as creatives, we still live in a left brain dominant world and society, and there are a lot of beliefs, I think, within the creative community and the spiritual community that money is evil, and, you know, if you are successful in your art or in your healing work, that you've sold out or have lost your authenticity in some way. And I think it's time for us to start telling a new story about that. I do think that, you know, the key to being successful as an artist, as a healer in business is our authenticity and finding our authentic voice and being true to ourselves and being in integrity and really walking our talk. And so that is essential in terms of realizing our creative abundance. And I think for me, going back to the intuitive painting process and how powerful that experience was, an embodied experience of knowing that I can go to a blank canvas and create something new in any moment. We all can. That's part of being innately creative. And so that eternal knowing that, you know, any time I can go and explore my imagination and create something and bring something from the visionary world, from the imagination, from the intuitive, you know, from the unseen into the seen or into the physical and make it real is so powerful. And that to me is a creative abundance.
Yeah, and in some ways, this society really defines abundance in such a narrow way. And there's such a focus on actual money rather than the kind of life that is fulfilling. And somebody can be quite happy with a low level of, a low level of money, but just doing what they really love. And other people need more money to do what they really love. I think it's very, there's kind of these figures always, you know, like six figure this, whatever, seven figure this, thrown out in the coaching business and in the internet world. And that's not important. It's whether you're able to do your mission. And some people need more money to do what they need to do or are in different life circumstances, and some other people don't. It's really a tool, and we've become really blind to this in many ways. And on the other hand, I think, as you said, there's people who, and there's some sort of saintliness sometimes associated with being broke and being an artist. And I, you know, in my experience, a lot of the things that hold back artists is that they can be broke and they're not working, they're not able to really work on what they want to because they haven't got the money thing handled. So I think there's a lot of things coming from a lot of different directions around this whole money question. And
well, and I think it's a paradox too, because I certainly have experienced it. I mean, you know, when I didn't have money, I had to innovate. I had to get creative. I, explore all these different creative solutions. And there's something kind of exciting and creative about that. You know, it's like that's a creative challenge. It's a different kind of creative challenge than when I started making money. You know, and I've had a six-figure business for the last 4 years, and it's allowed me to do more things and expand, you know, the business in more ways. And it's all been really organic. And yet, you know, it's a different – so I think sometimes people get stuck, artists get stuck in the creative – I mean, in the starving artist myth because of that. Like, they can still innovate and get by. And I also think there's something about, what I like to call the creative hero's journey – similar to Joseph Campbell talked about, you know, the archetypal hero's journey. I think there's also a creative hero's journey, and so much of that mirrors the hero's journey that Campbell talks about, but it's really about how we value ourselves and how we master the inner critic and our own self-esteem and our own self-confidence in order to really value our work in the world. And that means overcoming the inner critic, the external critics, and just going for it. And I think a big part of that is, really allowing ourselves to be seen and building our healthy ego development or, healthy self-esteem in order to really claim our creative birthright and get our gifts out into the world, because, you know, it's time for that saintly, paradigm to shift. And I'll never forget, when I started, money's always been a challenge for me. And most people don't realize that, but it has. I've always been able to make it. But I've, managing it has been a whole nother challenge, and something I've had to really, really work on. It's been part of my own, money mastery and sort of mythology. But, I'll never forget when I really started the entrepreneurial journey and somebody told me, no money, no mission. Like, if you don't get serious about your relationship with money, then how are you going to fulfill your mission or your life's calling and your life? So
very interesting. Yeah.
That really stuck and inspired me to master my own game with money so that I can support my vision in the world.
Well, what I'm just going to ask, if anybody has a question that or a comment, to do *2 to raise their hand, and I'll take your question when I see them, and either in the phone line or on the Creativity Cafe page or actually on the webcast. So I'm not seeing anything right at the moment, but please feel free to ask your questions. And in the meantime, I'm just going to see a couple of my own questions I still have, and while we're waiting. And what's the biggest fear people need to get over to live their big creative dream?
What is the biggest fear? The two biggest fears that I get with pretty much every client that I've had, and you know, every, including myself, was like, I don't have the money. I think it's the scarcity, you know, the scarcity thought of like, how am I going to do this? And I almost feel like the scarcity story, and I always like to say, you know, the scare city, like you're in scare city.
Right.
if you are singing that song. And I think that when we are in scarcity, we're disconnected from that place of all possibility, from that place of creative potential, limitless creative potential and endless possibilities. And so it's almost become scarcity, or scarcity has almost, I feel like, become socially acceptable. Like, oh, I can't do that. I don't have the money. You know, then I was like, oh, yeah, I don't have the money. Yeah, you don't have the money. No, that wouldn't be, you know. And it's like, we have to get over that. We have to get over that because we are creative people. We are creative beings, and we can create the money. And once I started to realize, if I really want something bad enough, I can create the funds to do it. I can manifest it. If it's in alignment with my soul's purpose, I can manifest it. And once I really saw that, again, in the painting experience, through my own spiritual practice with intuitive painting, and just seeing that in my life, and supporting my clients and students to experience that in their lives as well, so they can trust it, you know. I think that is the law of all sufficiency, which I highly recommend anyone that's struggling with this to look up John Randolph Price's book, The Abundance Book. And I recommend the pocket version because it was so transformative for me in my own practice, and I refer to it a lot in the Abundant Creative Course. But, you know, reprogramming our thoughts out of scarcity and into one of abundance, I think, is essential. The other thing is caring what other people think. I think that as creatives, we have to find our own voice and trust it, make it. In fact, there's a great quote by what's his name? I can't think of it. Dr. John DeMartini, I think. Mm-hmm. And he is a lecturer on personal growth and used to be a chiropractor. And he has a great quote that, you know, when the voice inside becomes louder and more visible than the voices outside, you have mastered your life.
Ah, I love that one. I hadn't heard it.
Yeah, and I have it on my website, somewhere on my website, I think on the coaching page maybe. But, you know, that was so powerful for me when I started to realize, okay, if I just trust my own intuition and my own knowing more than what other people externally are telling me, then I am a truly sovereign being.
Yeah. Yeah.
And truly living an empowered creative life. And so that's what I get really passionate about coaching people on, is how to make that shift into trusting themselves and their abundant creative potential, and then also to listen to themselves over and their own knowing over anyone.
Well, we're coming up to the top of the hour, and there is another question here, which is, How you've talked about the fears that people have and a few ways to get across it, but do you have any particular techniques that you've found helpful to get through your fears of your creative fears?
Yes. So, for example, if I'm in the studio in front of a painting with someone and they are stuck, and we don't even need to really get into the, sometimes we go into the direction of, well, what are you afraid of? Or sometimes I might even invite them, like, what do you not want to paint? Because I think there is
a lot of energy
in that which we sort of repress or what are you afraid to paint? Because usually when we're stuck, it's because something on a soul level is wanting to be expressed, or an emotional level is wanting to be expressed, and our personality or our inner critic is keeping that hidden or at bay or controlled, and is creating that stifling experience. Mm. Because when we really meet the paper or the canvas fully, you know, the painting is going to mirror our experience and evoke from us whatever we need in that moment in order to experience our wholeness. So if somebody is afraid, I might also say, we'll paint the fear. For example, if I'm working with a client and they're meeting their money fears about taking the next step or investing in themselves or their vision or their dream, mm-hmm. I may say, well, paint your money monster.
Mm-hmm.
Or paint the fear. What does it look like? Does it have a face? What color is it? And then exaggerate it. Like, oh, it's green and drooling, drippy goo. You know, how can you, like, really give yourself permission to go into the intensity of that fear creatively?
Yeah.
And something shifts when that happens, when we acknowledge our fears, when we acknowledge difficult emotions. Or, you know, we were just teaching, my colleague Pam and I were just teaching in Boulder this past weekend, and there was a client who is an artist, a trained artist, and she was really had a lot of inner critic voices around it. This is too much.
Mm.
There's too much going on here. It's too much. And I said, how can you make it even more too much? Like, bigger, and exaggerate that. Go big, you know, make it more trite, or whatever the inner critic voice is saying. And when you exaggerate it, what we're doing is we're overriding the belief from that inner critical voice that it's too much.
Okay. Beautiful. Well, I could go on talking a long time with you, but we're coming up. Coming up to the end of our time together, and I had just two things. Whether there's anything further that you would like to add that you think our listeners need to know, and then also how our listeners can find out more about your services and about what you do.
Great. Thank you again for this opportunity. It's been so fun. Yes, I'm currently on tour with the Freedom of Expression Tour, where I'm doing a one-day intuitive painting immersion. My next stop is in Los Angeles, June 7th, and then San Francisco, June 14th. So if you're in the California area or you'd like to come visit and connect with me in California, you can check out firetreestudios.com under upcoming events to register for a full-day workshop. And I'm really calling these are all of their workshops. They're really one-day immersions in the intuitive painting process and one-day retreats. I'm calling them a retreat because we provide everything for you for the full day, all the materials. It is like a meditation. It's incredibly nourishing. And we also include a healthy gourmet organic lunch to nourish your body as well. So those are really, really lovely. And then if you're interested in working with me one-on-one, you can also check out the website or email me directly, melissa@firetreestudios.com. I offer a private Ignite Your Life or business mentoring program. And I also do a 7-day painting, intuitive painting retreat on Martha's Vineyard every year in September, which is a lovely, just really intimate, rich retreat in a very inspiring environment where people can really deepen their process, their creative process and their relationship with their intuition. And then I also have a training program for people that are interested in becoming facilitators and creative catalysts in the Fire Tree Method. And again, you can find all of that information at firetreestudios.com.
Lovely. So thank you so much, Melissa, for showing us how intuitive painting can open up our creativity and also have such a profound impact on other aspects of our lives and businesses, and your insights on creative abundance. And also thank you so much to all of you who took time to come to the call. And you can, as Melissa said, you can check out her offerings on www.firetreestudios.com. And for help in developing your creative passions and innovative projects for social change while creating outside-the-box sustainable lifestyles, you can check out my website and programs at www.katiecurtin.com. So once again, Melissa, thank you so much. It's been such a delight having you.
Thank you. You too. It's always a pleasure connecting with you, Katie.
Yeah, definitely. So thank you, everybody, and have an amazing day.